David A. Price presents...
Hello, folks. Welcome to Marvel Noise, episode 467. I'm your host, Steve Raker. Down in the comic book bunker, while my astral self rendezvous with Andrew the LA Rabbit and WWX Kevin for some Marvel noise making.
Yay! That's right. Andrew's part.
Yeah, well, I was trying to think of something clever, some clever dastardly villain of the astral plane that he has to look out for, though. But I was confusing it with the mental one.
It's all good. It's Netflix and chill around here. Marvel Noise is the podcast proudly sponsored by nobody. And in the spirit of Derek Coward's Deliberate Noise Network, we talk about all things Marvel. Whatever catches our eye or burns our britches sometimes. Whether it be comics, movies, television, toys, games, or fandom at large in general.
And that novel.
And that one time, that prose novel.
Kevin, have you read that thing yet? How many years have you?
No, we read other books, though, about comics that were big boy books. You know?
Oh, yeah.
It wasn't just that one novel.
No, but that was one of the few fiction books I've read.
You can find, listen to, and download episodes over on marvelnoise.com and get new episode announcements on our social media pages. There's also Indie Comic Book Noise, our sister show, and we may even make some distinguished competition noise before all is said and done sometime in the future here.
Yeah, we just got to figure out which host does it. Is it more Marvel Noise or is it more indie? I don't know. I think more Marvel, but I'm willing to listen to arguments, gentlemen.
Scandalous.
I mean, you know, a lot of those guys worked for the same. Although I am staring lovingly. I just got the Jim Aparo Artist Edition. It was on deep discount.
Ooh.
You know how much I love myself some Jim Aparo, but I don't know that he did a lot of Marvel work now that I think of it.
Nope. That I know of.
Speaking of stuff we got, I mean, I'm not going to talk about it, but it's crazy that I finally got that hardcover collection of that John Byrne X-Men Elsewhen. Oh. What a world.
Whoa, you went hardcover. Look at you. I think, the digi version.
Oh, it's going to be a good time.
Yeah, that should be fun. Looking forward to going, getting my copy and going through it.
I mean, I probably pre-ordered that in, September last year or something?
For sure.
And I kept on getting emails that it was delayed. And I'm like, I don't really care. That's a long way off.
Then they announced the autograph edition. Oh, man, what?
Yeah.
In my order for the artist edition, I also got Boys Volume 1 of the Micronauts Epic Collection. A nice fat little tome. I think I'm going to probably pick up the other ones. I just wanted to make sure. I have such fond memories of this, but I've not read it in 40 years or whatever. So.
Let me know when you reread it, because I have a strong desire to reread that series. Several years ago, I think it was, was it with Adam Bessignotti or with somebody? Maybe it was with Jerry McDade. We reread the Tales of the Microverse stories that were in the back of some of the issues of the Micronauts series, but
McDade makes sense because they had that prominent X-Men was their big, we need to get them in the Marvel universe. And I don't know, I guess they were tired of using Spidey and Wolverine and Punisher. So it was the X-Men's turn to help shepherd them in.
Yeah. I'm dying to reread that series. I really like that stuff a lot. The Pat Broderick artwork, the Michael Golden artwork, and even the
keep
Steve
going,
Ditko.
Steve. You know, there's someone else that worked. Yep. There we go. That's what I was waiting for.
Butch Geis, Kelly Jones. Come on
Sweet
now.
Steve Ditko work. You know, in the 80s, he really his Marvel work has a certain amount of charm to it for me.
I liked him on those Micronauts annuals because they were toys. And he, you know, this is in the day before, you know, decades before Toy Story. It was, he made them look like toys. And it was interesting in that respect. It made me think about them in a different meta kind of way.
Also, by the time I remember reading this, I don't think I could find the toys on the shelf anymore. I had a few Micronauts, but I didn't have a ton of them. So it was always
Oh, man.
kind of a weird. I mean, I loved them because they were one, the original high articulation figure,
For
plus the little
sure.
magnet parts and all that. But I only had a few. And, you know, by the early 80s, I think I had moved on to Star Wars and other stuff. So I was like, it was fun. And they didn't make figures of half the characters they created anyway.
Well, that was the frustrating thing. I was very into the Micronauts. I had a lot of them. I mean, those little white thumbs on the hands were so thin that they would totally break in when you were trying to put like a gun in their hand or something. But they didn't make a Kreuer you got maybe, a couple other guys, but it was so not what the comic was. But I lost all my Micronauts in a 1980 house fire when I was 10. Boo-hoo. And I was able to identify them clearly because the metal parts didn't burn. Only the plastic melted.
But it always remind me somewhat of ROM, and that the comic blazed on much longer than the
Oh,
toy
so
line was
much better
earned.
than the. I mean, the only thing where the toys matched the how cool the comic was like the Shogun Warriors. Right? Those toys were big and cool.
Dang
Even
it, Steve. You know, I always wanted the giant Shogun. I only had the little tiny metal one.
Oh,
I
I had
never
a
had the
few of those
giant
metal
one
ones.
with the rocket fist.
Yeah, I
The
had
spring loaded. Those were the dream.
three of the big ones, and I had all of those little ones because there was a little bookstore, gift store between my house and my school on my walk home that used to sell them. So
Oh.
I had them all. By the time the school year was over, I had all of
I felt like those things were almost as big as me back. I mean, I'm sure they weren't, but it felt like they were
They
like,
were. They were
wow, like
huge.
life-size toys.
And then
Like,
they came out with the Godzilla and the Rodan, and I was so psyched because it's like my G.I. Joe guys had to fend off Rodan many a time after that.
that's a real thinker for you, Steve. See what I did there?
Yeah, so let's reread that. I want to reread Micronauts. Tell me when you want to go, and I'm right there.
I'll shoot you an email. I'm gonna probably start pretty soon. I gotta get caught up in real life for a few minutes first. But excited to get back into the swing of regular life. Been some disruptions in the rabbit warren, but fun stuff and other stuff. But you know how it is. Life every once in a while throws you some stuff you gotta do, and then you want to get back to the fun stuff.
Fun stuff.
Speaking of fun stuff, or maybe it wasn't fun stuff, did you ever read any of the Marvel mangaverse?
No. Well, maybe one of the X-Men ones when they first did it. Maybe.
I don't think so. I don't, unless it just was in the library and I flipped through it or something. But I had some, it took me a while, the whole reading backwards and getting the reading order. I was discussing this with some friends. Even when I get it down, I'm still reading the panels in the wrong order too. So, you know, it's everything being reversed is just goes against all my muscle memory.
Well, I believe this wasn't in reverse. So I
Well,
remember reading one of
the
these
mangas
in
that.
2002, and it was a Punisher one. But do I remember anything about it? Not really, other than it was probably all right, but I didn't pick any of the other one shots up.
Yeah, the ones I read must have been from like the 90s when they first dabbled with it.
Because they're celebrating the 25th anniversary. And I was like, okay. I mean, you can do that.
We must be old.
I know, right? I'm just like, wow, okay. Soon they'll be celebrating the tsunami line.
Hey, at this point, the Ultimate Universe is like some old-timey stuff that no one remembers. A lot of new collectors are like, what was it like in the old days when the Ultimate Universe rolled out?
Oh, yeah.
Don't get me started on the new universe, guys.
Oh, yeah. When are they celebrating the new universe?
Is it the new old universe? The new.
I know they tried to do a little bit with it here and there, but you know.
I read the miniseries that just wrapped up, 4 issues with Greg Land covers, and I still read it. Wah wah. Planet of the Apes versus the Fantastic Four.
I'll be honest, when you met, I read the first issue, Steve, but you're right, the Greg Land cover, I was like, oh, is he doing the interiors too?
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm ready for.
Well, these 4 issues were written by Josh Trujillo with art by Andrea DeVito, who we've seen many times over the decades, right? And is it a he or a she? I still, after all these years, don't know if Andrea DeVito is a he or a she, so I apologize. But this is some of his or her nicest work.
His, hers, theirs.
Because, you know, there's a it is like a Ron Lim quality, even though it's not derivative at all of Ron Lim's art, but it's just sort of those clean lines that are almost make you think animation style, but it's not. There's not the anime type exaggerations or anything like that. Just some nice, clean, sharp artwork, and DeVito's a good storyteller.
Yeah, and I assume it was the colorist Eric Arcinaghi, at least on the first one, that does kind of the retro, like it opens with like a movie po like a Planet of the Apes movie poster style credits and a little bit of a, I don't know, sepia tone or whatever,
Yeah.
almost in some of it, that gives it a bit of a flashbacky kind of feel. Even when they're flashing back, it's strong, but even in the regular panels, I felt like there was a bit of a playing around with that, and I was like, I really like that because Planet of the Apes is a thing, and I'm also glad I felt like they went OG Planet of the Apes and not
Yes.
whatever
Oh, you
the
have to.
modern nonsense
Right. Right. This is like right after the first movie, kind of like. Kind of a sequel to that. The story starts with the Fantastic Four powerless and stranded on the Planet of the Apes, and they're on trial for heresy. And during their defense, we get the explanation of how they got there, how they lost their powers, but they're not lost. They've been transferred to four of the principal Planet of the Apes cast, which is kind of
the
silly.
Super Apes.
Right? The journey's a decent one, though. Zaius is witnessing humanity sort of as he's never seen it with the Fantastic Four's dynamic and compassion and confidence. He's never seen that in humans before. And Doom gets involved, and what almost seems cliche, Kevin, but the Red Ghost and his super apes are there too.
Of course they are. How can you not do that?
This one's definitely worth a read when the collection hits. Again, I have enjoyed DeVito's artwork and feel like I can pretty much spot it at 10 clicks after all these years. But there's definitely a few times when I was reading this where I forgot that I was looking at DeVito's work. It does a really good job. And if it ever gets on the Marvel Unlimited, for sure,
Well,
check
that's
it
where I
out.
read the first issue, Steve.
Oh, all
Spoiler,
right.
the first one is up already. And I was like, well, let me try this out. Then, like you say, the Greg Land cover was always a little. All right, brace yourself.
If it's on the Unlimited, go get it. Go read this thing. It's fun.
Go give it some clicks. Is that what the kids say?
I don't
All
know.
right. Speaking of classic stuff, bringing back, What If is back again.
Well, what if was in that it opens with the what if start of it too. So the Watcher Uatu is everywhere.
This is true. I mean, I haven't been into like a lot of what ifs for a long time because, you know, I'm thinking, how often do I like not enjoy like a lot of what ifs or I go, that's not like what if. But
Well,
this,
it's hard. They've made so many of the what ifs into actual continuity.
yeah,
It's
I mean,
hard to be like, yeah, that's the what if I remember.
and maybe people think I'm a fool. I mean, I could have been a fool, but it seemed like a lot of these more recent what ifs that they announced were more interesting for me. So I got what if the Uncanny X-Men. But on the side, it says, what if Cyclops stayed with Madeline Pryor? So I'm like, that's fine. I'll read that.
Who'd they get to draw that thing?
So they got Jan Basildua. And
Some
then...
of those pages are kind of burned. It's such a the original story is so weird
Yeah,
that
I know.
it's one of the ones that I don't know, at the time I must have loved it, but going back, you're like, this is a strange plot twist, even for the excessively soap opera-esque X-Men to have happen.
And then stories by Jerry Dugan. And I'm like, he wrote some good X-Men.
Yeah, he gets it. He's also well steeped in the
Yeah.
continuity. I'm sure he remembers that issue.
Yeah. So I'm like, okay, I'm down for this. And I'm happy to report that it's a lot of people die and horrible things happen. So I'm like, that checks all my boxes for a what if story.
But a lot of people died and horrible things happened when he left her too. So
You got to count up the
we
people,
got
Kevin.
Inferno. What's worse?
So apparently Ferno is the good outcome. This is the bad outcome because things get as almost as bad as you could you and you and once you get to the end of the story, you'll be like, how what could be worse? Because there's a lot of Watcher doing his Watcher thing, telling you about stuff and recapping events for you. And then I was happy that some Krakoa stuff shows up in here too. So I was like, oh yeah, let's dig into more of that stuff.
Now, were you able to? You were familiar with the original stuff. Do you think someone who didn't? I mean, they'd have to do a ton of recap because the X-Men was so heavy in continuity at that point. I wonder if you could just parachute in not knowing anything.
Well, the thing I wondered too is it says if Cyclops stayed with Madeline Pryor, so you're like, well, at what moment?
Yeah, like when?
Yeah, so it's the end of Inferno and they save Madeline's life. And that's like on the fourth panel. So I mean this moves. So that's another thing that's fun and exciting. You're not having like splash page after splash page. They gotta get somewhere. They gotta kill a bunch of people. So I mean, you gotta get through those Marvel events and all that history and to get to Krakoa, you gotta get there. So I mean, I enjoyed it. So I mean, that's a good sign.
Yeah, definitely a good sign. Well, if we're going back in the time machine, I got something too. And that is Jay and Silent Bob of Future Past, Jay's of Future Past, which
Wow.
is Kevin Smith returning to comic books with Giuseppe Camuncoli. Now, sister show listeners of Marvel Noise will know. I actually think Kevin Smith's best comics are his Clerks related characters, and I feel like he can probably do that stuff in his sleep. I like those movies, not all of them the same amount, but I even like the little animated cartoon, and I just feel like he does that. That's a fun world, and having some of those characters thrown into Marvel is fine at his hands. I vastly prefer it to all his superhero comics, so I'm a bit of a weirdo for me. This was a slam dunk, probably gonna like. I mean, it would have been cool if they could have gotten like Jim Mafood to do it, who did some of the early
Oh,
Clark
yeah.
comics and everything. But that's no takeaway from Camuncoli. And it's just a silly, it turns out that now, for those of you that don't know, Kevin Smith, before he became a podcaster, made movies. And his first breakout independent movie, black and white, shot on his own dime, He plays a side character called Silent Bob, whose whole shtick is he doesn't say anything. Then he has one or two monologues near the end where he has some pithy summary statement or bit of wisdom. And then his stoner compatriot, their two guys always selling weed or up to no good, is Jason Mewes, known in the film as Jay. And he's the motor mouth, mile a minute trash talker. So the two of them are just unrepentant stoners who hang out in front of one of the locations of the movie. So having those two characters in, they maintain their identities here. But what's funny is everyone talks about how old they are, which is true in the real world, but it's funny in that, Captain America is a character from World War II because of the sliding scale of continuity. I guess in this, they're somewhat older. But the whole point is that Kang warns Dr. Doom that for some reason, Silent Bob is like this problem that's going to be the end of the world, and he is a factor that has to be removed. So he puts out a gigantic bounty on him, so the heroes have to keep defending him. And I won't give the twist of why they need to go after him or how it's resolved. But if you enjoy the Clerks world, it's just Kevin Smith riffing on that stuff. And if you only know Kevin Smith from his superhero stuff, I would say try any of the Clerks media that's anywhere. And if you like any of that, he's able to tap into that stuff. It's not as, I feel like the comics were some even better because he could really go to crazy places. But this is a lot of fun. And yeah, it was, nostalgia bait, obviously,
Yeah.
with,
But it's him celebrating it, right? Like he's enjoying it along with you. And I found a lot of his nods and nostalgic stuff to be very clever within it.
Oh yeah, and as we talked about recently too, like a swipe of the AF-15 cover. So there's lots of
Twice.
those bits of history in there, and it starts out with the classic. We love the Silver Sable meeting with Dr. Doom, which is a well, you know, we
Oh yeah.
for
Yeah,
longtime listeners.
but it starts off so seriously and like with a cool bit of Marvel lore that he's presenting, totally showing that Smith knows his Marvel stuff, but he's talking all about how Latveria and Simkaria had a truce during World War II and like helped each other evict the Nazis and stuff. And then you get to that they celebrate every year, they honor the fact that they work together, and then they do the page turn, and it's Dr. Doom talking about his master cleanse. And it was like it took it from like deep into like this Marvel lore that was really cool to like, whoop, nope, I'm this is going to be a stupid Kevin Smith comic. I thought that was really fun and a great way to start off and let you know what you're getting into.
And like I said, they run an ad for some other Marvel Kevin Smith written thing that I actually don't have much interest in. I'll probably just read on the Unlimited. But to see his humorous treatment of the Marvel Universe with the kind of silliness. I don't know that it always works when he's writing kind of in continuity. I found his, like I said, his superhero stuff hasn't really worked. I mean, the Green Arrow was fine, but like the Spider-Man Black Cat didn't do anything for me. His Batman stuff, I don't even know that I finished it.
Oh,
So,
he writes Jay's dialogue here. So fun though, like when the Fantastic Four show up and they showcase their powers one at a time, as the Fantastic Four will sometimes be introduced doing, right? And then you get to the page turn and it's the whole group and Jay's in the back and he goes, "Oh, cool, it's the Incredibles."
Yeah, that's a running gag too. Every group that
I
shows
think it's
up,
so funny.
he misidentifies them with another pop culture element.
You get a scene with X-Men and X-Men villains. You get Spider-Man, Deadpool, who's taken up the bounty. He's trying to kill Jay and Silent Bob. And I think it's so funny because he basically rails on them in a way that is exactly what his movies are like. And Jay throws back at him, "Well, that's a little Gamora calling the Goblin green, isn't it?" That's a great line. And then he's about to kill them, and he says, "Give my regards to Alanis," because in Dogma, Alanis
She's the
Morissette
god.
played God. And they didn't go out of their way to explain it there. And I thought, I just, those kinds of clever dialogue lines where it's like, the more you know about the Marvel Universe, the funner this book is. The
Yeah.
more you know about the Askew Universe, the more fun this book is.
And I would say classic Askew. Like, I haven't really, like, I know he's made movies. I don't think I've seen any of the last few. Like, you don't need to be, if you're a fan of the older stuff, I feel this is, and maybe there were references to Yoga Hosers or whatever, but I haven't watched any of that
It's just
stuff,
the
so.
first. It's just the classic first bunch of
Yeah.
movies. Although he did reference Clerks 3 and that kind of thing too. But and then at the end, there's a afterword that Kevin Smith writes about just how honored and happy he was to be able to write this book and do a mashup of his worlds, right? That the worlds he loves and everything. But then scattered throughout his afterword are little panels from other books this past month or two, and where Jay and Silent Bob have been showed up in little cameos, just like as little Easter eggs, kind of heralding this little crossover happening. I think that's really fun.
Yeah, it was a clever way to preview this, and because I hadn't read any of those comics, so didn't know if I would have noticed them in the panels. And sometimes they're more subtle than others too. And they do a parody of the using the his Blunt Man and Chronic characters of the sort of hostess ad. But what I thought was funny was it's an ad for his comic book store, but nowhere does he give like the website or the address or
No.
anything. It's just
Yep.
because I think the one out west here closed a long time ago. He used to have one on the west coast and one on the east coast.
He might have to pay for an actual ad if it included too much of that kind of information. You know what
Yeah.
I mean?
Well,
This
it's
keeps
the
it like a
branded
parody.
advertisement.
Yeah.
So I was like, and it, I, yeah, but I just thought it was funny that he has the whole
I with the
thing of making fun of the kids with the hostess ads.
For a Marvel comic too, including the Blunt Man and Chronic, and I think they managed to skirt around the cannabis use in a way that, again, if you know, you know. But if you
Yes.
don't, you could kind of skate through it and have it go over your head. So, and I thought they did that really cleverly too, in several places.
And he could use his sort of crude humor, but again, sort of not use crude language to get around it too, I thought. Like a lot of the sort of very base humor that's in those movies that I enjoy, but not make it, you know, drop in the wrong words that would be a problem maybe in the comic.
Like Kevin, they're a bunch of Doombots are shooting lasers towards them, and they're hiding behind objects and structures to keep away from it. And the Fantastic Four mop up the floor with the Doombots, and then ask Jay and Silent Bob if they're okay, and if they got blasted at all, if they got fried, and the thing says they don't look fried, baked maybe, like that kind of thing. Where they
And if you did
reference it
enjoy
without referencing
Mallrats, there's a callback to the a lot of questions were asked of Stanley in that movie, and he
Yeah.
continues and a little callback. Yeah, just it was fun for me being a fan of both, but I just wanted to tell people if you're thinking this is like Spider-Man and Black Cat, it's not. It's him being silly and having a good time. And maybe if you love Spider-Man and Black Cat, you might not like this. Like it's as different as you can get, well, while still having the same guy writing it with his same kind of quirks and tics and all that, it's a much different context and references. Yeah, I don't even know. Did I finish Spider-Man? I must have finished it. I know it took him forever to
I was gonna
finish
say the
it, but
last issue took a long time. Or was it the in between? The last two came out sort of near
yeah.
each other, but then there was a big break in between that.
Well, at least it had nice artwork.
It sure did. All right. You know my ongoing rant about how Chip Zdarsky's Captain America run is, to coin a phrase I heard Jim Shooter say, allergic to action. And I.
This is going to become your bit soon.
I'm afraid so. And I like Zardsky. His Substack is great. I really liked his Zardsky comic news. I even pre-ordered the collection. And his new comics magazine is a good one too. I've looked at a couple of issues of that. But spinning out of his Armageddon, Wolverine, and Captain America run is a event book, Avengers Armageddon, written by Chip with art by Delio Diaz and Frank Alpizar, with a Dyke Ruin cover.
So did the Ninja Turtles show up here?
Right? I'm not even going to get into the whole story that much because I didn't really read through it front to back, and maybe I will at some point when there gets enough action and stuff going on that it makes me want to see kind of what set it up or whatnot. But the action for this issue in your first issue of the big event, on one page, infantrymen are shooting at the Red Hulk and his Hulklings, and it's got one panel where the soldiers are shooting, one panel where the Hulk is being hit by those shots, and one panel has the team tearing through a bunch of military equipment, ripping up stuff. And the next page has one panel where those Hulks are hit with some missiles. Then a later page has a panel where a guy in a Captain America, no, not really costume, more like armor that's looks Captain America-ish, is walking into a building and he gets shot at, but the bullets bounce off of him. And at the bottom of a subsequent page, Captain Marvel grabs this guy and flies him into the sky. But on the first two panels of the next page, he grabs her by the neck and she falls to the ground. And that's it. That's all the action in a $5 Avengers Hulk comic book. Every panel that has any kind of action going on. It's absurd. It's month after month, comic after comic. I don't get it. But I'm
It made me
happy to
think of this sentry lying on the bed, and he was deciding if he was going to be getting up.
I don't do the century either.
Okay.
Even though I like Paul Jenkins.
That first mini was good.
Hulk engage in cerebral battle with the bad guy.
I like that little Red Hulk miniseries during the Doom event where he had Machine Man and Deathlok and they were kind of like trying to escape from Latveria or whatever the hell it was. That was fun. But now all of a sudden, General Ross is a bad guy and he's got an army of
All of a
Hulks and
sudden,
it's like
Stevie was
crazy.
always a bad guy. General Ross. I never liked him, Steve.
I never liked him either, but there was that Al Milgrom cover with him. With the gun,
Oh, yeah.
committing suicide on during Assistant Editor's Month.
You know how he, I blame him for letting that spy get in that bunker to begin with.
For sure.
All right. I have a spectacular Spider-Man Brand New Day. I guess we have a movie coming out.
Nice to go back to the classics, Kevin.
I
Especially because I
know,
heard
right?
nobody likes that comic. So glad you're revisiting something from what was that, 15 years ago that it came out?
Well, it's not a pure look back because as it happens in this miniseries, there are certain things that have been inserted into here, like Bailey Briggs. And I went,
Oh,
why does that
so
name
this
seem familiar?
is this like a Jerry Dugan, Scott Koblish, where they're going to put a lot of funny panels in the middle
No,
of
this is
the
a Dan Slott Marcus Toe joint. They do have I mean, those are okay, maybe they should have credited more people. 'Cause those are the they're create well, I mean, they also have Alex Sinclair. But like they do have this sequence in here that sort of gives you like Spider-Man's origin. And then they have another sequence in here that are different than the regular stuff, and it has a totally different vibe. And you're like, I mean, not that Marcus Toe is a bad artist, but it's just like when you see just like a little other sequence by another artist, and you're like, oh yeah, I like that. And then like You're like, oh, imagine if the whole issue was like that. I mean, I think it would have upped the issue for me. Because you only get like a little bit of the Marcus Martin sequence. And I think we can agree he's quite good. But I guess this will have some stuff that bleeds into modern day, and it's not just the Spider-Boy stuff. Like the Kingpin has this document that has all these criminal activities. Like, if you know anything, criminals like to put their activities in books, and they're usually in vaults, and then someone will find them. So I'm thinking that's the thing that might carry on through all this stuff. I don't know if it entirely gets to the level of the original Brand New Day era. I mean, there's a lot of, like, they gotta set everything up too. Like, maybe you never read the original Brand New Day stuff, right? Like, there's a lot of that out there. So they gotta tell you, like, what era this fits into. What's the status quo, the Daily Bugle? Who's the cast? What's Spider-Man doing? How come people can't remember who he is after Civil War? There's a lot of that stuff.
Why are we
So
surprised that Osborne's back?
yeah,
Or Harry's back?
that's not in here. But they might get to that. So like maybe the subsequent issue will be better with the extra space, but you still get like the eel, and it's funny. They're showing a bunch of pictures in here at the DB, because it's not the Daily Bugle. And then one of them is like Spider-Man punching the Shocker, and one of them is Spider-Man fighting Whirlwind. Yes, some very all little Whirlwind shows up in here. Of course, that made me happy, right?
That's why you picked this up.
I
Thought it was going to be
had to
for the
mention
strong anti-marijuana message that we get another review of
but
for
you also
picking up
get
a
like
classic Spider-Man villains.
if you enjoy the Punisher, I mean, there's several pages of the Punisher like complaining about law enforcement and Spider-Man. They're like, oh man, I've been on the staking this place out for 9 days, and now they arrested those guys. I wanted to just murder them. And it says it would have been way more efficient and better for society if I can just straight up kill all these people. So I mean, that's setting up future fisticuffs and stuff, because he takes matters into his own hands here. And being that as this is a Brand New Day, you get some Mr. Negative, who's got to be one of the better, like, modern era Spider-Man villains. That also takes some setup, because you need to know stuff about Mr. Negative and Aunt May's
Soup
homeless
kitchen.
shelter, soup kitchen
I
type
think
of
that
place.
I would guess that being prominent in the Sony video games, probably more people know about that. I wonder than I only played the first big Sony Spider-Man game. I know they've come out with a Miles version and all these other ones, but
Yeah.
that agency plays a big role in that game. So I'm like, wonder how many people just know it from there, you know?
Yeah, it could be. I just remember like on message boards back in the day, they were just like, what do you do with Aunt May? And I remember that when she had something going on, but I couldn't really figure out. I'm like, she needs to do something else. She needs to have like another life and another thing to do. And like that is like the greatest thing.
No, you don't like in the past when they would just give her a different boyfriend and that's what their thing to
No.
do. There was Nathan or Doc Ock or whoever that
Yeah.
was her character arc.
I know, but yeah, like I remember the Nathan stuff and then the borders and all that stuff. I'm like, that was fine, but and then she had like nothing. She's just, I don't know. But I'm like, I'm glad she has something. I'm like, that was great envision for her to do stuff.
Well, I think traditionally she was always portrayed as so feeble that it was hard
Yeah.
to always like on death's door with, you know, some one thing or another. It felt like there was a long run of Aunt May being the sort of damsel in distress.
I feel like that ran its course though, and like moving into a modern era, like someone could be like, that's not Aunt May, but also, I mean, I don't want her to see she's, I don't know, 35 or whatever, and she's got plastic surgery or something. Young Aunt May is a little weird, but
Marissa Tomei, Aunt May.
yeah, I mean that still seems weird. I mean,
Yep.
like it might be fine, but
Fine
it's
for Happy Hogan, but
yeah.
hey, I'm stuck in the 60s with wheat cakes, Aunt May,
For
so
sure. Oh yeah.
Francho wheat
I
cakes.
don't know why. I'm just thinking of Aunt May investigating stuff too. And remember that liquid that was leaking under the door from Peter's bedroom?
Oh dear.
What is this substance? Anyhow. This hopefully it it I mean it's not bad, but this hope it goes up a few notches with the second and third issue.
Fair
Well, I think it's
enough.
funny they've really worked the alternate version where they're he's still married and they have the kid and all that, and they've done a few different series with that style where he goes on and
Yeah, that's the thing. Like I can see people saying like with the latest Ultimate, oh, but there's already been stories where he's been married, so it's not as innovative. I'm like, that's true, but I'm also feel like we've never got a story in that Ultimate version quite, well, I haven't read one anyways, quite like that one. So I'm like, I mean, that's good enough. Even though like the married thing has been done in alternates. Like that was so different.
all right, you guys ready for a Bronze Age binge?
Of
Oh
course.
yeah, Super Steve, when you told me this, there was something in each one of these that was specifically engineered to get me to on board. You guys can guess what it is if you want.
Right.
So do you
Back.
have Bronze Age binge like theme music or something?
No, but maybe a tag for the episode?
Yes, of course.
All right. There we go. Bring it back. We can't bring it back, but we can bring back the tag for a Bronze Age binge. Because back before the era of limited series and even the Marvel Comics Presents anthology, it was titles like Marvel Spotlight and Marvel Team Up and Marvel 2-in-1 where those B and C list characters got any attention. So I was looking at Marvel Team Up, but the issues with the Human Torch in them, rather than Spider-Man, the Human Torch is there's a lot of issues of Marvel Team Up, especially from the end of 1973 when the series started through 1975. The Human Torch appeared in 12 of the first 40 issues. Almost a third of the first 40 issues.
Yeah, but he's just getting Spidey's leftovers. Yeah.
Yeah. With Spider-Man, he appeared in issue 1, 2, 3, 10, and then later 39 and 40, and then after 40, 69, 21, 147, and with the Fantastic Four, 100 and 133. But in between those issues are these six issues where he was the anchor hero, where he headlined. It was the Human Torch and somebody else. And those are issues 18, 23, 26, 29, 32, and 35. Issue 18 hit the racks at the end of 1973, and it's the Human Torch and the Hulk, written by Len Wein with art by Gil Kane and inks by Mike Esposito and Frank Giacoa. And they have to face Blastar, who hadn't been seen in 5 years real time since he was electrocuted in X-Men 53 from 68. Here, Blastar gets revived by this crooked scientist using gamma rays that give the Hulk a headache and draws the Hulk towards its source, where the Torch, in his red uniform, this is Kevin, this is the era where the Human Torch was like wearing the red uniform instead of the blue. Kind of
That's
weird.
so weird. What's with that red uniform? I always say that.
And the Torch is already engaging Blastar. And in the end, the Hulk pins Blastar's arms and legs in a ball of crushed adamantium, leaving just his head sticking out, and then chucks him out to sea, like skipping him like he's a rock. And he's not shown drowning, but it's certainly implied. It's
He can
brutal.
live up in the negative zone. He doesn't need surface dweller business. But
Whoops.
this one landed me from because you guys know I love Gil Kane. And it's got loads of up nose shots,
Oh,
really low
yeah.
dashing. That's my jam.
For sure. Issue 23 from the spring of 1974 is The Human Torch and the Iceman. And I had this one as a kid. And I would have turned 4 years old that June. So this one coming out in the spring of 74, this has to be one of my earliest comics.
Yeah, that's pretty young, man. Look at Steve reading in an
I
advanced
know.
level. Lots of big words in this one for a
You're like,
four-year-old.
yes,
Well,
I
I must
started
get
out
this
looking at the
appearance of
pictures.
the thermodynamic man.
Right? Crazy. This was also written by Len Wein with art by Gil Kane, Mike Esposito, and even though he's uncredited, Dave Hunt on inks. The Torch comes across a jewel store robbery with an ice patch on a warm day, and then gets hit by a snowball from behind. So he goes after and finds the Iceman, and they fight until the X-Men break it up.
Oh, Gil Kane X-Men. Man, that looks so good. But I have this one because it has former Marvel Noise and forum contributor as a featured character. That's what lured me for this one, Steve. You haven't gotten to him yet, but you'll know when you say the name.
And what I thought was cool about the X-Men showing up is they hint at going off to Krakoa, where they'd be captured, and was the whole catalyst for the all new, all different X-Men and giant size X-Men number two. But it wasn't the Iceman doing the robbery and everything. It was the Equinox, that thermodynamic man, with the.
Is former Marvel Noise contributor Equinox.
He's got the powers of both Iceman and Torch, but he gives him a good fight and actually escapes at the end. Issue.
Sadly, he has the visual appeal of a sack of wet potatoes. Not a great character design, but great name.
After
So
this
apparently
issue,
he appears in a future Marvel team-up issue as well.
that he does. After this issue, the Torch appears in every third issue for the next one, two, three, four, five appearances, which is crazy. So 3 issues later, in the summer of 74, issue 26 is The Human Torch with Thor, written by Len Wein, with pencils by Jim Mooney and inks by Mike Esposito and Dave Hunt under a Gil Kane cover. This one has the Torch following flaming footprints. And he confronts Molto, one of the lava men. And he's has the Torch seek out Thor for help. And they go underground and they fight a horde of lava men. But there's a really cool scene where the Human Torch leads a horde of Moloids into action. And a big,
Wait, so
like.
all these guys have names?
Sure, there's Hans Mole Man and all the
Yeah,
world
right?
thing. Just Molto. But he dies. Ooh, poor Molto.
Oh. Pour one out for Molto.
The great gimmick of that this is the he if he loses his hammer for 60 seconds,
Oh,
he turns
right.
into Don Blake, so they work him. But this one, why I like it is it showed why the torch was a pretty good character for this because he does his classic write a message in the sky to get the other hero. Used
Yeah.
to do that to contact Spidey all the time and everything. And I was like, well, I'm not a Human Torch fan, but that it makes him a good character for team ups because he can always get in touch with people without convoluted means by just doing his skywriting.
I like that he uses the same rendezvous point so that, because he already knows how to flame write that in the sky, right? He's already worked out the sequence. Doesn't have to figure out a new
Yeah.
place.
No,
Three
no.
Three issues later, in the fall of 1974, is issue 29, where it's the Human Torch with Iron Man. This time, writer Jerry Conway, with pencils by Jim Mooney and unfortunate inks by Vinnie Coletta, under a John Romita Sr. cover. This one is pretty bad.
Oh, Steve, come on. It's a great first appearance of a new villain, so you can corner the market on that. It's nose Iron Man era, so, you know, he's looking sharp with his nose built into his face mask.
Tony Stark calls the Fantastic Four to help with some industrial sabotage incidents at Stark Enterprises, but only the Torch shows up, much to Tony's dismay. And they're up against Infinitus, a gun-toting, self-proclaimed reincarnated man who...
I thought that was a inflammatory condition, Steve. Yeah.
It sounds like one of the drug names now, right? And he beat Iron Man solo, and now Iron Man needs help. And with the Torch, that's just the help he needs, it turns out.
Yeah, just one of these buffoons in a generic outfit with like a laser pistol type of thing that populated 70s villains, but still, rare first appearance. You guys should run out and get some low-grade copies of this.
And then yeah, someone's probably cut out the value stamp.
Three issues later, in the winter of 1975, we get the Human Torch with the Son of Satan, written by Jerry Conway, with art by Sal Buscema and Vinnie Coletta, under a
I want Son of Satan.
I think a great Gil Kane, Mike Esposito cover. I love Gil Kane drawing the Human Torch because he just is, you know, the figure work is awesome. He can just draw him in these great poses, and Kane's anatomy is so Gil Kane-ish. I love it. This one has Wyatt Wingfoot getting possessed, and the Torch bringing Damien Hellstrom to exorcise the demon, which he does, but then the whole tribe plus Damien himself get possessed. But fortunately, light is the demon's kryptonite, Andrew.
This one is the reason I like it is I love a Son of Satan character, and he's working at the college, which makes me laugh a lot.
He'd be close to the sinners.
And this, the convoluted plot, the problem is he's using the Torch, who had not only has his weakness, but he's relying on him to use this particular exorcist. And I'm like, man, so what if the Torch had brought some generic priest or whatever to do it? You know, his whole plan, because the bad guy's trying to get it, the Son of Satan. So that's the, but it was this convoluted plan that required a lot of things to happen that seem unlikely, like you say, involving a hero that specializes in your weakness, and then making how do you know he's going to get this exorcist guy? He could get any of them, you know.
Yeah, these stories are, I mean, I'm simplifying them greatly for sanity's sake. In most cases, this is the 70s, folks. And three issues later, we get the last issue of the Human Torch as the anchor hero. In the spring of 1975, issue 35 of Marvel Team-Up, it's the Human Torch with Doctor Strange. Jerry Conway writing, Sal Buscema pencils, Vinnie Coletta inks, Gil Kane, Al Milgram cover.
You gotta love Clea wearing a shirt that doesn't button at all. It just tucked right into it. Like, she's letting it all hang out. But this one has another rare villain first appearance, Steve.
Spidey and Doctor Strange's teammate from the Defenders, Valkyrie, are missing after the events of last issue. So Strange knows that the Torch is one of Spider-Man's only friends, and he enlists him to help find the two. And the Torch himself gets captured and wakes alongside Valkyrie, who's about to be sacrificed by an evil wizard, Jeremiah.
I thought he was a bullfrog, Steve. But yeah. I love his... He's got a great outfit. He's got a big cross crossed out on his chest. They were not afraid of religious complaints, I guess, in the 70s. Son of Satan, and then this guy does not seem church-friendly.
The Torch gets free.
Church sounds like a character from the 90s.
For sure. The Torch gets free, and he fights Doctor Strange... Or he fights the Jeremiah guy... But Doctor Strange basically shows up like a Deus Ex Machina, and he's no match for Jeremiah. Jeremiah's like, phew, he's out of here. And Spidey never shows up, and they never find him. He's lost forever.
I thought this was like a stealth defenders crossover, really, the two of them. And we had the Hulk a few issues ago. We're getting the whole team together.
But it's funny, Torch was in a lot of issues of Marvel Team Up, and they really seem to have been trying him out as a bigger player in the Marvel Universe by having him every three issues be the anchor character in Marvel Team Up and giving him that snazzy red costume. It makes me think they were trying to get some attention on him.
Well, what's funny is then it would be the Thing that would get the next solo book out of the
Yeah,
FF instead.
but interestingly, it would be the Torch would get a option, right, for a TV thing, and that's why they couldn't use him when they made the Fantastic Four cartoon a few years later. They had to do the Herbie the Robot thing. It wasn't the old rumor that we all believed when we were kids, was that they were afraid of someone lighting themselves on fire and jumping off a building or something like that, like the Human Torch. But that wasn't it. The Torch had already been optioned. Well, why would if he had been optioned? Maybe it was from this time period where they were trying to make him more prominent. Maybe that was part of them selling him to Hollywood. Who knows? All conjecture.
Yeah, it always seemed like a weird one to pick because, like the logistics of doing that in the late 70s would be a real drag. Like, there's no CGI or anything. How are
Yeah,
you going to have
just
your
get a stuntman and
character?
light him on fire. Come
Yeah,
on.
cover him in jelly and set him on fire every three scenes. They just seem like I know that they would have had an easier time with the Invisible Woman or something, because there, at least you could just, the effects lend itself to it.
She made that pencil cup move. Yeah, fun stuff. All right, got any others before we call this an episode?
Maybe not.
All right. Then we're calling this an episode.
All right. I like calling things episodes.
That's another episode of Marvel Noise. Come back with us next time. And we've got all the infrastructure behind the scenes set up now, so we can get back to creating the content and popping it out there. We'll see what we end up settling on for a frequency, but it might just be when we've got enough noise to get an episode out. Look for us on Indie Comic Book Noise as well, and quite possibly popping up on one of these feeds an episode where we talk about the Distinguished Competitions books. You never know. It's been building for years.
I've been slipping a lot of DC talk into our
That's the
other
real
two
reason.
shows. So.
I hear you, Kevin Smith and your Green Arrow and all that business.
My
I know, I know.
Jim Aparo artist edition. I love that Jim Aparo. I don't care that he didn't work for Marvel. He was my Batman artist, and I'll die on that hill.
He was my Elvis. All right, thanks, Andrew. Thanks, Kevin. And thank you all out there for listening. See you next episode. Later.